You've just landed inside Launch Street, the innovation podcast, where we interview top innovators out there shaking things up so you can innovate and differentiate and get further faster in this crazy cluttered world. And now, innovation thought leader and your super fly host, Tamara Kleinberg.
Hey, Launch Streeters, Tamara here, your innovation guide and lover of all organizational things and systems and stuff. I have been known to go to the Container Store for hours on end. I think maybe it's because organization's not my strength. So I tend to love when I find systems digitally and physically that work. Now, I don't know that I've ever really stuck to any of them. So if you have one, let me know. But I try. All right, let's get to it. Launch Readers, I know you've heard me say it before. Having an innovative idea is only half the battle. The other half is getting buy-in for those ideas from those key decision makers, the people that sign up on the checks, the people that can keep your ideas going, whether that's internal or external. Many, many brilliant innovations come to a dead stop at the presentation phase. So it got me thinking, what are we doing so wrong? I mean, if you've heard me talk about it before, we talk a lot about the language of innovation and how to get buy-in from the people that matter. And I think there's another layer to this, so I wanted to dig even deeper. So I asked Oren Cleff, author of Pitch Anything, which, by the way, is one of my favorite business books, and the director of capital markets at investment bank Intersection Capital, onto Inside Launch Street. So his book breaks down how he gets people to sign over multi-millions of dollars on his idea pitches. And on Inside Launch Street, we have a pretty fast-paced conversation where he breaks down the difference between kind of how we present, how we try to go to this kind of high-level cognitive stuff, and the lizard brain, and why maybe that difference is holding us back. Why the whole, you know, Game of Thrones, winter is coming, is actually the start of every presentation, i.e., are you ready for the change that's coming? And how to show excitement without desperation so that you can craft an irresistible pitch or presentation to anyone. Now, I know this borders on sales, but I'll tell you right now, innovators, if you want to get traction on your innovative ideas, you better learn how to sell them in a way that makes people listen. I think this is going to help you do that. Here it goes. Oren, thank you so much for joining me today. This is going to be a fascinating conversation.
All right. Let's see what we can do with it.
I'm just going to set the bar high to begin with. All right. Since we're just getting to know you, what's the one thing people would be surprised to learn about you?
Well, the one thing people would be surprised to learn about me is that I agreed to come on this podcast.
Why would that be? What are you talking about?
No. So, hey, listen, I've written easily 255 institutional pitches, presentations for money. $1 million, $3 million, $5 million, $1 billion. That's what people hire me to do, is to make pitches for mainly for money. Right. And I think the surprising thing about that is every single one I've done with a pen and paper. Of course, not the final, you know, ends up in a PowerPoint, ends up in InDesign, but the start of them, pen and paper. Like, that's the hardest thing. You got to build something. You got to build a pitch. Somebody has to see what ideas you have in your mind, why those ideas are important to them. Why now? What's in it for me? What's the big idea? And it just all starts with one human, one piece of paper, one pen. I think people are surprised to learn that. Most people think it's fancier than that. It's not.
So this might be a naive question, but I have to ask, since you're talking about this, do you think that most of us, part of our challenges with our pitches and when we're trying to communicate an idea, is we jump from what's in our head to the presentation? Because you said pen to paper a few times. Is there something in that middle or that first step that really matters to get it right?
Yeah. So for those of you who watch Game of Thrones, that's the first step.
I mean, who doesn't? Like, what we say is, like, for those of you who don't, go watch it, come back.
let me tell you who doesn't. I was speaking in Las Vegas to 1,500 people a couple of days ago. In the middle of the presentation, I have a good presentation. It's an hour long. People laugh. They cry. It's amazing. Once I really get going, 30 minutes in, a guy stands up, holds up his hand. And I say, sir, what is going on? I see you have your hand held up. I'm not to the part where you can ask questions yet. This is the funny part. right? You see everybody around you, they're laughing.
What are you doing?
Stand up with your hand up, right? And he says, oh, my wife had to leave. I go, I'm sorry, why did your wife leave? The language. Okay, what kind of man lets his wife leave and stays? But anyway, what's wrong with the language? Right? Why do we have to hear the language? I go, okay, well, you're definitely not going to like the next part because it's about Game of Thrones. So, but why? We do pepper in some language. But why Game of Thrones, right? Well, except for that one guy, what's the context? Winter is coming. That is the beginning of every presentation, no matter whether it's for SaaS software, for it's a logistic company, it's for big data, it's for Internet of Things, it's for AI, it's for whatever whatever it is that you have, that you're beginning. The beginning of the presentation that most people get wrong is winter is coming. What does that really mean? Things are changing dramatically. If you're not prepared for the change, if you're not prepared for the change, you're going to be left behind. Life is going to be difficult, and you're going to lose out to those people who bring in furs and store food and stop focusing on fighting and weatherproof their place. When the change happens, if you're not ready, you're going to get wiped out. So
So how do you know if you're ready? And I know that sounds kind of obvious to some people, maybe those of us who deal with change and thinking differently all the time, but I think there's a lot of people out there who aren't even sure if they're ready or not.
So if the presenter or the listener?
Both, I guess, if there's a perspective for both.
Sure, sure. Well, I think about it this way. Maybe 85, 90, 93% of the human mind is dedicated to detecting change. That's why we exist, because we were very, very excellent at three things. Number one, detecting patterns. Number two, focusing immediately on anything in the environment that was changing. And number three, deception, right? That's why humans exist. That's what we're good at. But of those, detecting change is what and movement is what most of the human mind is dedicated to. So anytime you frame something as changing, it immediately snaps people's attention to you. So it doesn't matter if the listener is ready or not to hear about change. Change immediately makes them pay attention to you. And you as the presenter, right? The way you know you're doing change right is if the stakes are high enough, right? Some people present change without enough. So Internet of Things is going to grow from, 50 billion market to $52 billion market in the next 2 years. Who cares, right? There's no stakes, right? When you have change and there's stakes, and the third thing is those stakes are in terms of human dynamics, human experiences, human pain, human loss, then you have the introduction to a presentation. Doesn't matter what it is. So again, it's high stakes, things are changing, and lives are in the balance. And when you have those three things set up, then you have an introduction to a presentation. I don't care what it is, that will work.
And if I hear you right, and from reading your book, this is not just about trying to raise money, but this is truly anytime you're pitching an idea that needs buy-in from the people that matter.
Anytime you need someone to pay attention to you, right? So if you think about it, here's the formula. Attention equals convincing power, right? I think you, me, anybody, without thinking about it, if you can get somebody to pay attention to you for half an hour, 45 minutes, 2 hours, 4 hours. You could sell anything. There's nothing you couldn't sell if somebody would pay attention to you for 4 hours, but they won't. And that's the problem, right? How long are they going to pay attention to you? I don't know. You're not a professional presenter. You haven't really organized your subject. You ramble on maybe 2 minutes, right? You organize your subject. You've, you know, practiced it a couple times, maybe 5 minutes. I'm an expert in this. I practice presentations for dozens of hours before they go to get in front of a buyer, right? And the most I can hold somebody's attention, 15, 18 minutes in a presentation. Attention equals convincing power. And so, yes, that's the issue, is getting somebody's attention.
So I want to dig into your book, Pitch Anything, because for launch readers out there listening, it is brilliant. You should absolutely pick it up and read it. So there's a couple things in there, Oren, that I wanted to ask you about that I went back before our interview and took copious notes on and looked at what notes I'd taken prior and what I tried to implement and all these places. And one of the things was, in the very beginning, you just have this whole thing about this lizard brain versus how we present ideas and how we overcomplicate things. And it got me thinking about a presentation I did once where I thought it was the most beautiful presentation and high level concepts and like, duh, why aren't they getting it? And I was using SAT words, like it was amazing. And I got totally shot down.
Yeah, no, I understand. Well, there's a couple things, right? First of all, one of the reasons you thought it was amazing is because you were talking, right? And
obviously
fall in love with the sound of your
voice. So good.
Wait a second. Why didn't somebody write that down?
Right.
Has poetry like this ever emanated from another human being on this planet?
I mean,
do you hear that violin music? Violin music that you are listening to is actually my voice, the mellifluous, iambic pentameter, poetic nature of the words coming out of my mouth. This is sing-song material. Somebody bring in a camera crew. This is amazing. So that's why you thought it was good, right? Because you were talking,
yeah.
People didn't leave the room, and you thought that's how attention works. But in reality, I think, attention works very differently. What a lot of people don't realize is the human mind is not something that exists, right? There's thoughts, there's electrical impulses, there's synapses. There's no mind in there, right? So if we open up a brain of a rat, a frog, a human being, whatever it is, there's no mind. You can't find it. There's only a brain, all right? There's no soul, right? The soul has never been discovered, and the mind has never been discovered. These things have not, along with NLP, been proven out by science. Right. So what is in there is a brain, and the brain is something very interesting. When I worked with a cognitive psychologist, he said, look, you don't understand how the brain works. And so I'm talking about mind, and he's talking about brain. Cognitive psychologists care about how information moves through the mind of another human being. And so they explained, look, the brain formed in three distinct phases over a couple million years. The first part of the brain to form in human beings, or Homo sapiens, we were actually Homo erectus, and something before that. But the first part of the brain to form was the crocodile brain, the croc brain. And that brain takes in survival information, right? What is this? Something is moving. Something is talking. There is a change going on. I got to pay attention to this. Is this something I should eat? Is this something I should mate with? Is this something I should kill? Got to figure that out very quickly. So no matter what it is, ROI, SaaS software, Internet of Things, logistics, trucking, going to Mars, politics, the government, whatever it is, whatever ROI, whatever IRR, whatever thing that you're offering and the benefits you're offering, the first part of the brain to get information is the croc brain, and it can't understand any of that stuff. It only understands eat, kill, mate with. Right? And so all your information gets chopped down very, very roughly. So unless you start out with stakes, human beings are at risk. Things are changing. There's a lot going on. It doesn't really get through that first part of the brain. So then information goes up, right? Ultimately, you want information to get to what feels like the mind, which is the neocortex. Neocortex processes logic. It's got language. It's got numbers. You understand it. It doesn't have emotions. But it understands things and ideas and ROI and return on investment and software and things like that. In order to get information from the croc brain up to the neocortex, has to pass through the midbrain. So you got croc brain, midbrain, neocortex. All right. The midbrain understands social situations. So in order to get the information to the part of the brain where you want it to be processed by your customer, by your buyer, by your investor, it has to pass up through the first part, the croc brain, second part, the social brain, which understands are you below somebody or above somebody? And then if that person believes that you are higher status than them, then the information will move up to the neocortex. There's a lot of work for your information to do before it gets to the part of the brain that can make a decision. And that's why it was frustrating for you, because you were going right to the neocortex and you weren't getting access to it. The other parts of the brain were stopping your story, your narrative, your information, your ideas, everything you had from getting through.
So let me ask you a question, because there was a part in there where you talked about, the brain, and I'm not going to say this right, so you're going to have to say it in the right way after I jumble it. But you talk about how the brain's going, all right, is this going to take me energy to digest this information and figure it out? And if it is, I'm going to pass because I'm lazy and efficient and I don't want to have to expend energy on this. So, and that was a major hurdle for me, is I felt like when I was presenting ideas, I think what was happening is I was forcing the people on the other end of the table to think too hard.
Yeah. So tattoo these two words on your arm. Okay. Not right now, but later.
I'll do it by a professional.
Okay. Yeah. I have this done by a professional and use like colors and stuff.
Right, yeah.
Cognitive load, right? Cognitive load. So the neocortex has a set of instructions that the rest of the brain and all your processing centers, the amygdala, the croc brain, all the processing centers have to follow. And it says, look, if I've seen this information before, do not send it to me. If I can figure this out easily, do not send it to me. If this follows an established pattern, don't send it to me. Figure it out somewhere else in the brain, because the neocortex, I'm involved for very difficult problems that need short bursts of very, very high energy consumption thought processing. So don't send me the easy stuff. Don't send me the stuff I've already seen, and don't send me the obvious, because I'll reject it, right? And so because the neocortex is the part of the brain that really does thinking, uses up a tremendous amount of energy, 20-25% of the body's overall consumption of energy is by the neocortex, right? So think about it. You got a study for a compliance exam. You have to study for an accounting exam. You have to do a spreadsheet. You have to write some technical paper. First of all, you don't want to do it. You leave it till late at night, right? Because you just don't, because the neocortex is going, I don't want to do that. Don't send it to me. Please give it to someone else. And finally, right? And when you do it, it wants quiet. You want a cup of chamomile tea, green tea. You want it to be quiet. You want a clear desk, and you really want minimum distraction. It's very, very difficult for the neocortex to do problem solving work, and it doesn't want to do it. And so anytime you ask somebody to do that kind of thinking on your behalf about you, your project, your ideas, whatever it is, you're imposing a cognitive load, and their neocortex is kicking back and going, I don't want this load put on me, right? Take it somewhere else. And so minimizing the amount of work they have to do is your challenge, not their problem. So that's one way you could think about it.
Can you give me an example of kind of what would be a presentation or just a section of it that would create that cognitive load versus a way to say it or present it in a way that wouldn't?
Yeah, sure. Right. So we're the number one. And by the way, what are the kinds of companies that you're working with? Or give me a product category or company or.
Oh, sure. So I do a lot in consumer packaged goods. And I'd say a lot of our Launch Street listeners are in consumer goods or retail.
Yeah. So we're the number one selling shampoo in the Pacific Northwest because we use mainly hemp, and hemp is 25% a more sustainable product, and the results give you 66% cleaner hair, and it's got a mint vibrancy that makes you feel 50-75% fresher, and even the cost of these hemp-based products are a little bit more, but they last a lot longer.
I just fell asleep, I think.
Yeah. So this is a number of different information categories. It's got some information. It's all mixed up. There's no narrative flow, and it's a very heavy cognitive load. And now my brain has just got to process it. Is this true? How does it fit in? What's in it for me? And why should I care? So there aren't stakes, there isn't a big idea, and nothing is changing in that introduction that I just gave you. And there's not an incentive for the croc brain, first part of the brain to hear that information, to go any further. And there's no status involved. I didn't say, listen, I'm the number one PhD, Harvard ranked, in healthcare, in consumer goods, commenter in the world. New York Times writes down everything I say about the human body and prints it, no matter what it is, even if I use the P word. Okay.
Well, Jake, I was like, wait, what? is that a part of the skills? Is actually like shocking people a little bit here and there, waking them back up.
Keyword, puppy. Puppy.
Well, we won't tell anybody where my mind went. That's not good.
Right, exactly. I can't help it if your mind is in the gutter. Everyone else here is thinking, right. So the first thing is, raising it. So if I were to fix that presentation, yeah, not knowing anything about the product and thinking about a consumer good, right? It is, what's a big idea today? What you put on your body can have more chemicals than ever was anticipated by nature. You could put more chemicals in your body with 1 ounce of shampoo than nature ever intended for you to have in your entire life.
So that's the stakes.
That's the stakes. So what? What do you care about your own life, right? Think about your family, right? And the other people, right? The exposure to chemicals is changing so rapidly in the last 5 years. The amount of chemicals you're exposed to, you know, out there when you're traveling, it limits your ability to absorb additional chemicals while you're washing yourself in your home. Things have changed dramatically. Listen. So that might be interesting if it was in the National Enquirer, if Dr. Oz was telling you. But whenever Harvard Business Review wants to know something about chemicals in the human body, my company is who they call first. We've been quoted in the New York Times and Harvard Business Review 1,000 times in the last 2 years. So that would be a different kind of introduction that works through the way the mind likes to get information, which is big stakes, human stakes, things are changing, and then what is the status of the person giving me this information, and then the information.
We're going through a lot of different things. And so listeners out there, please go buy the book, because really there's so much in here. But I want to take this to the next.
Wait, let me paraphrase that.
Yeah.
Listeners out there, ignore this madman and the things he's saying now. He actually wrote a good book, and the words are much better than what you're hearing right now. Go buy that book. It's called Pitch Anything.
Well, I don't know if the words are better, but it's definitely in depth. How's that? So I want to talk a little bit about something you call framing. And, you know, I know all the kind of different types of it are in the book, but I want to share a little bit of a story with you that happened to me, just to kind of gear it up a little bit. So I do a lot of new business presentations. You know, I'm asking people to spend a lot of money to do innovation pipeline work, to do, you know, culture of innovation work. And one of the things that I started to see happening that would make me panic, and I think set off my lizard brain, is I'd go into the meeting and the person on the other side would try to exert their authority on me. And they'd say something like, well, I only have 15 minutes. And suddenly I'd be like, oh my God, well, then I got to talk really fast. And I got to get it done in 14 minutes. And let me get all the benefits, you know, and I'd panic. Or they'd say something like, just get to the bottom line. Like, don't give me all the fluff. Just get to the bottom line. And they would, for lack of a better way to say it, it's almost like they would own the meeting and the conversation. And I had to then be reactive to the situation. And you've got a little bit of a different approach to that.
Sure. So this is what I would call the power frame, right? And so what's a frame? Well, it's a way of looking at a situation, right? So if you think about it, we're familiar frames because we have time frames, right? If somebody says to you, hey, I only have 5 minutes, they have framed that encounter in a certain way. If somebody says to you, hey, we only have 15 minutes, sorry, you know, we're running a little bit late and that we won't have time for the whole meeting, right? They're framing that encounter, not just with time, but also with status, right?
Right.
And then you could say, well, that's a power frame because they're exerting power over you. But when somebody comes up with a power frame, right, the question is how to break it. Why would you want to break a frame? Because when a frame exists that defines a situation that you're in, it controls the behavior of both parties, all right? So when somebody says to me, hey, listen, what did they say to you? What were the words specifically?
Oh, well, there's two of my favorites. One is, listen, we only have 30 minutes, so we need to move quickly. That was one. And the other one is, hey, we're all here. Bob can't be here, even though he's the final decision maker, but we'll take that information to him.
Sure. So for me, let's take the second one first, right? Our decision maker isn't here. Tell us what you have, right? And then we'll go explain it to him, right? That's a frame which says you are not of sufficient importance for us to bring our most important guy here, right? That's a power frame. You aren't powerful enough. Your status isn't high enough. We don't think enough of this project, right? And I got in here and I'm going to interpret it. That's the frame that's set up, right? Now, you know it's unacceptable, so you have to break that frame.
And I'm assuming that breaking that frame is not going, okay, well, let me give you this information on what to say, and then let me know what Bob says.
Right. So first of all, you have to frame up in your mind that the chances are near zero that they're going to be able to take your pitch, your presentation, the ideas in the right order and give it to Bob correctly in an environment such that he says, yes, I'm interested in doing it, right? So you have to frame that up in your mind, and that has to become something that has to become a lens through which you view the world. So then you could say, no, that is not going to work. All right. And you can have fun with it. I tend to be a little bit meaner. You sound like a fantastic person.
So what do I say instead?
Right. So then the next step would be, I have been doing this for 10 years, right? I've been explaining this stuff to buyers and investors for 7 of those 10 years. There's nobody better in the world at explaining this. So it's understandable, so it's digestible, so it's repeatable, and it's simple. You have been doing this for 0 minutes in your entire life. Right? Not an insult. There's some things you're very good at that I'm terrible at, for sure. Right?
I can't explain your business, so.
I can't explain your business. I don't know what it is. I couldn't explain your life story, your biography. You're an amazing person. Look at that dress you're wearing. I could never even fit in it. You're amazing at what you do. But here's the frame. But I'm amazing at what I do. And it makes no sense to me. And here's the frame. And it's unfair to Bob to take away the best person in the world at explaining banana shampoo.
Of course.
And have the worst person in the world, with all due respect, you, to explain to him. That's not fair to Bob, right? And so we all have to be fair to each other. Here's what I suggest. Why don't you see if he could step back in for a few minutes, or tell him that didn't work out today and we can reset the meeting from where it's going to be fair and work for everybody. Does that make sense? Is that fair to you? That is how, just off the top of my head, right? I haven't been in that specific situation. That is how you would break the frame of Bob isn't coming, right?
And I have to imagine, right, that like especially using the word fair, people don't want to see themselves and their identity as unfair. So to say, is that fair to you? I have to imagine it has a little bit of skill to it as well.
It is. So this is the moral authority frame. When you are fair, honest, forthright, transparent, fun, interesting, bringing new information, prepared, right?
Yeah.
Some people call that professional, but think about that as the moral authority. You came on time. You came prepared. You came with relevant information. You came with stuff they need. You practice it and package it into a short period of time. You did everything right. So now you can frame everything they do as not normal and not fair.
Right.
That's the advantage of being professional. So the way to do that is say, hey, there's a million ways to break that power frame. The other way, just hearing your personality and listening to you, that you could do it is you could say, huh, that's a little weird to me. Not really sure what's going on here. Right.
Yeah.
Because you guys need the product. We set the meeting. We talked about it for 2 weeks. We all came prepared. Everybody, came to the meeting. The conference room looks great. No Bob. What's really going on here?
Mm. I like that too, because you're almost calling the elephant in the room, which is that, everybody's double booked and Bob isn't taking this as a priority and may not even do it anyway.
And so now let me take it further. I totally understand. Right. Things may have changed for you and you guys just forgot to cancel the meeting, which I understand. This is not for everybody, right? Yeah. However, I will not do this for you. I will do it with you. If you guys want access to 25 containers of banana shampoo, it's time for you to start showing up. And let's see, okay? It is so much work for a supplier and a vendor to place an order, pay for the order, ship the order, quality control the order. This doesn't give me confidence that we are supplier and vendor. I'm confused at what's going on. Why don't I give you a few minutes to get yourselves organized? Come back. I'm okay with anything. Tamara, your head is full of dead batteries. I don't know why you came here. Please take your banana shampoo and go somewhere else with it. That's fine. I'm right. Totally okay with that.
Because you're not getting the business anyway if Bob's not there.
Right. Exactly. Or, Tamara, listen. We're so sorry. We just got discombobulated. We need 10 minutes to get ourselves organized. We're really interested, and we'd like to go further with you. But just tell me one of those things, right? And I totally accept either answer. So with that whole succession that we just did, by the way, you don't have to say it mean the way I am. You can say it nice the way you are, but you have to say those things. With that succession of information, you have changed the whole dynamic from being controlled to controlling the situation.
All right, so here's what I have to ask, because I've now tried this, of your suggestions a few times, and I want to talk about the time one in a second, because that was the first one I did, and I was totally sweating when I did it. But were you, when you first did it, were you nervous? Were you worried? Because I know that the head trash that went through my head as I tried to change up the control of the meetings and the frame was, oh my God, what if they hate me and think I'm a jerk? Like, and not because I care if people like me, but more of, I'm in business. I want like to make these connections. I don't want to walk away with people hating me for that reason. So were you nervous? Did it just take a couple times for you to get over that and realize, oh my God, this works and everybody actually benefits?
Yeah. So for people listening, right? Let's think about it. What you're talking about is they go, hey, well, we only got 15 minutes.
Yeah.
And you go, it's okay. I only have 14 minutes. We got to get.
That's what I tried. And then I was silent. And then I started to sweat. I don't think they noticed because I said it with such confidence and then shut up. But I was like, oh my God, I can't believe I just said that out loud.
Well, let me tell you where this came from, right? So I was somewhere and they were like, hey, listen, we only have 5 minutes, right? So you got to pitch the whole thing, really quickly before I have to go. And I just got mad. I'm like, look, motherfucker, can you pitch your business in 5 minutes? Is that something you can do? Are you asking me to do something that you yourself can do? No, I didn't say that. I thought it. Right? And so
that's great.
So then I thought, okay, I can't go that route because that's very adversarial. And, you know, I'm trying to get an investor in the deal.
Right.
And so I said to myself, so they said, hey, you got 5 minutes to go. You know, and I said, you know what? 5 minutes would be a total waste of time. I only have 4 minutes. Let's get started before I don't have 5 minutes to waste. We got to do this in 4 minutes. Are you ready? Pay attention. Let's roll.
Is that to shock them?
Yeah, so that because that is what you know, nobody really expects you to explain a real estate deal or a mass market consumer product in 5 minutes. It's just a controlling move, right? And that's all it is. Yeah. And so what you want to do is take control back. Go, I don't have 5 minutes. I only have 4 minutes to spend with you. With the implied messages, I don't even know I don't know if I'd like to work with you. I don't know anything about you. I don't really have that much time to invest in you. I'll spend 4 minutes on you. We'll see where that gets us and if I'm spend any more, right? So whatever it is that people are trying to impose from a power frame on you, you have to break it. Otherwise, and this is new and it's not in the book, and I think this is important. When somebody has power over you, three things happen, okay? One is their focus becomes extremely narrow so they can't appreciate the scope of what you're talking about. Number two, when somebody feels like they have power over you, they have risk-taking behaviors, right? So they'll do things that they normally wouldn't do if they didn't have power. They'll look at their phone, they'll look away, they're writing their book, they'll text, they will, engage in some other activity, they'll interrupt. So they'll take risk-taking behaviors, right? And the third thing is they only see you at a very surface, cursory level. So they don't see any depth in you as a person. That's why you have to break the power frame. It's not should you do it, how do you do it, Why should it? You have to do it because somebody can't pay it. If attention equals convincing power, again, when people have power over you and they exhibit these moves, they only see you at the surface level. They take risk-taking behaviors, and their focus becomes very, very narrow. Can't listen to the scope of what you're saying. That's why you have to break the power frame when it presents itself.
So do people who put themselves in that power frame, does it show up the minute you walk into the room with those people, whether they're your boss, your colleague, it's a pitch or someone you work for? Is it obvious right away?
So it is obvious right away, because what happens is it's the dominance hierarchy is immediately in effect. Once you walk in the room, get on the phone, right? Who is the higher status person? Who's the alpha chimp? Who's in control? Right. And so maybe we'll get a chance to start a phone call. I will come on. Right. And whatever it is, I will try and impugn them as having done something wrong, having done something weird, or make some comments, some alpha comments that lower their status from the know it all, have it all, be it all buyer to either appear with me or below me. I'll give you an example. I will always get on the phone and say, hey, so you guys couldn't figure out how to type 6 numbers into a conference call. That's why it's now 11:05. So who pays me back those 5 minutes? Is that accounting or is it customer service? Where do I go for that? Right? No matter who it is, a billionaire. And then they'll laugh. And, you can't do it in a mean way. By the way, the more aggressive you are, the more cocky you are, the more funny sort of charismatic you have to be. You can't just be shrill, mean, tough without also being funny, fun, and interesting. So it's got to be.
And you got to say it with a smile.
Yeah. Right. Say it with it. Right. So, but anyway, that will reset the status alignment. Who owes me 5 minutes? No, seriously, I'm going to collect. Right. You got to do whatever's right for your personality. There's a million ways to do it. I get on the phone call and they'll be talking about sports or weather and go, hey guys, I've been wanting to buy a Jeep on eBay. Are you going to be talking about sports and weather for the next 15 minutes? Cause I can go do that. When you're done.
That's great.
Right. I got a million of them. Put me in this situation and I'll make it happen. But at the beginning, it's not that you need to lord over them, but they need to understand that it is a treat, it is an opportunity, it is a special event to be able to spend time with you, right? And they're not in control.
And really what if I'm hearing you right, Oren, that the reality here is if you're not level setting that power and shifting it and reframing it, then you're not winning because nobody's listening to you anyway. So because to your point, right, they narrow their focus, they're taking these risk-taking behaviors, which sounds ultimately like they're not paying attention to you. And if they're seeing you on the surface level, whatever it is that you're presenting to them is not going to get through regardless. So you might as well take the risk and try to level set a little bit.
Because you said that so eloquently, you said it so sort of academic.
Like maybe I read the book.
Interesting. It sounds like you read the book or maybe wrote the book. Let me say it in a different way, right? We've all been on a conference call where somebody has – where somebody's been sharing the screen and then they forgot that they were sharing the screen.
Yes.
And then you get to see whatever pet products they need or text with their wives or they're searching for a new car.
They're on Facebook.
Or they're on Facebook or worse.
Well.
I know your mind.
You don't know. That's why I don't do video.
Right, exactly. So, but that is when you've seen that behavior, that's exactly what you've seen. You've seen somebody that is risk-taking behavior. To be on a conference call, be sharing your screen and searching for Jeeps on eBay, right? And that is why do people do that? Because they feel like they have the power over the meeting, over the street. So look, maybe I wrap it up like this. My brother, he's a scientist. He works for a company called Near Earth Autonomy. They make, invested in by Boeing, they make software for aircraft to autonomously fly into dangerous places, right? But anyway, he's a kind of negotiator. He's a kind of presenter that goes, hey, listen, I don't play games. I just give you the facts, right? And I tell him, oh, so you play the I'm not a negotiator. I just give you the facts game, right? Everything between human beings is a power dynamic and a status ratio. And it's not that you have to be mean or aggressive. You just can't have somebody exerting power over you, because then they aren't paying the attention to really hear what it is you have to say. And so I think that is so important.
Before we keep going, I want to hear about the new book. But before we do that, can we talk a little bit about eradicating neediness? I want to make sure we get that in before we run out of time, because that was a very personal chapter and one that I think a lot of us suffer from, including myself.
Yeah. So thank you. Please really appreciate you meeting us here. If you sign us to, you know, if we do a deal together, you can reach me at any time. Here's my mom's beeper number. Here's my grandmother's fax number. You can call me at home. The customer is always right. We'll bend over backwards. This is all neediness, right? And so neediness triggers something very uncomfortable in human beings, because if you go back 70, 80,000 years ago, when human being, the mind was still developing and we're getting the social behaviors, there was no surplus of anything. So if you needed something from somebody, if you wanted something from them, you were a danger and something to be avoided and unpleasant.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. So anytime that you exhibit needy behaviors, it makes somebody pull away from you, right? And so the goal in all these presentations, you want something, but without being, the moment somebody detects neediness in you, they immediately feel a surge of power, right? And they use it. And that power is to say, this is all very interesting. Really appreciate the information you send. If you can send me anything else by email, we'll take a look at it and we'll get back to you if we have any more questions. So at any time that you're needy in a presentation, it makes somebody want to back away from what you have. So ultimately, and I think this is what I wrote in the book that helps understand and really deeply understand neediness. People want what they can't have. People chase that which moves away from them. And they only value that which they pay for. Anything outside those three rules, if you find yourself exhibiting any behavior outside of those three rules, you're probably acting needy and pushing somebody away. There's no sort of dynamic of where people are interested. They're listening to you, they're excited, but you're giving all the information, you're giving discounts, you're giving free trials, you're giving demos, you're giving information away, and they still want it. There's no middle magnetic ground, right? Either you are moving away and they're chasing you, or they're moving away and you're chasing them. There's not two interested parties sitting there goo-goo-eyed looking at each other like 16-year-old teenagers.
So here's where I think I get confused. What's the difference between, wanting to show the potential customer, the person who you're getting buy-in from, that you're interested in, that you are excited about their business and neediness?
Yeah. So it's nuance. It's very, I say it all the time, right? I wrote a chapter in a book. The book is in 11 languages. It's in two dialects of Chinese. I just came back from Italy. I speak all over the world on it. It's one of the most popular books. And the main chapter in that book is eradicating neediness. But yet I will tell people, I'm super interested in this deal. I'm really excited to work on it. And I really like what you're doing and hope we can work together. But I don't know that much about you yet. And in fact, if you sign the contract and hand it over to me, I would give it back to you, because I need to learn a lot more before I decide to spend 2 or 3 months with you, as one of our main clients, right? Here's some things I don't know. Have you worked with vendors before? What's your, payment history? Are you really trying to raise capital, or are you just testing the market? Have you worked with other investment banks before? Have you already been to market and you're just coming to me as an emergency backup? What's really going on there? I'd like to know a little bit more. So that is eradicating neediness. Even though you're saying, I'd love to work with you, I like this deal a lot, I'm hoping we can find a way to be in business together. So that set alone is attention-seeking, needy behavior, and is a deal killer. But on the heels of that, to say, but getting ahead of myself, I don't know anything about you yet, certainly not enough to do a deal. Let's continue moving forward, see if our circles overlap. If they do, I'm sure we'll find some way to work together.
You know, it's interesting, and I think you mentioned this in your story in the book. What, particularly in my early years, what I found was, and it actually loops all the way back to the power dynamics that we were talking about. If I felt like they were a good deal, I'd be happy to get them. That would be great. That's fine. They need me more than I need them. I would go in totally powerful, no neediness, and all of that would happen. But the minute that, you know, amazing client, when Disney yeah. called me, suddenly I was like, oh no, now I need them. And in an effort to be excited, accommodating, whatever you want to call it, I would come across as needy. So it was very situational to who I was pitching or talking to.
So this is the prize frame. Maybe we'll wrap up on this.
Yeah.
Okay. Here's the thing. So this is sort of like the Mark Zuckerberg effect, right? If you know the story of Mark Zuckerberg going in to raise the first real big institutional round for Facebook, supposedly he went in a bathrobe or a, you know, some kind of very informal, almost, you know, slippers and a robe to, you know, an institutional investor meeting. Why did he do that? Right? He's not crazy. It's so much, it gets so much demand, it didn't matter. Right? So the cure for neediness is pipeline. Think about it.
Yeah.
When
you're not desperate.
Right? Like, okay, so people going, yeah, that's great. There's a cure for you and tomorrow, but I don't have that much pipeline. But the number one cure is pipeline. I have so many accounts, right, that I don't even know what to do with my time. And when you take those calls so differently, like, hey, John, how's it going? Yeah. So sorry, we're so busy. I just got, do you want it or not? I know you have a lot of questions. Maybe I can answer one or two of them, but I've got to get all my orders in by Friday. And, you know, I write up, do you want it or do you want to just wait till next year? Right? That's how you behave when you just have an overwhelming amount of pipeline. So maybe you don't have that.
So that's a great, and I also think too, that's truly when you're qualifying for right fit, because you wouldn't take everybody anyway, right?
Yeah.
So they want to be good.
Like, hey, right. Hey, so I don't want to do the paperwork on terms. So can you just wire the money, right? I don't have time to write the, John, I don't have time to write the contract out. Wire the money. If I see it come in, I'll write the contract, send it over to you. We'll ship next week. Anything else, honestly, I don't have time. Right? That's how you would do with overwhelming amount of pipeline. So, okay, I don't have that. What's the next thing? The next thing is just to fix in your mind that you do have it and behave the same way. That's kind of tricky. It's pretty good play acting, but you can do that, right? Especially if you've had periods where your pipeline has been overflowing, you know the feeling of it, and so you can act that. I think an easier way is the prize frame. Listen, okay? I'm the best at what I do. Consumer products, nobody understands that better than me. You want to work with someone else? Go ahead. I have no problem. I do this better than anyone else. I'm giving you some of my time. During the time that I'm giving you time, this is in your head, by the way. You're not saying this, right? I mean, I could say this, but this is, you know, level 10 is you actually say this stream of consciousness. I'm giving you some of my time. During the time I'm giving you, there are rules. If you play by those rules, I'll continue giving my time and help you. You break those rules and we're not going to be able to work together. Okay? So you're going, okay, that sounds very dramatic and draconian and stoic, but does it really? What if one of the rules is that I get to make a good margin? I'm giving you my time. I'm the best in the world at what I'm doing. This is in my head, the prize. I'm the prize. I'm not trying to win your money. I'm not trying to win a contract from you. I'm not trying to win your acceptance because I'm the best in the world. I have all the acceptance that I need. I'm going to give you some, one of the rules of working with me is that I get to make a good margin for working with you. If you behave in a way that seems like you don't want me to make a margin or I'm not going to get to a margin, that breaks the rules of the engagement and I have to go away. Now, that would be very real, right?
Yeah.
Because you know, the worst thing in the world is to work really hard, sign a contract, and have no margin in it. And so once you identify these rules in your head, and you also stake the ground that you're the best in the world or the best in the market at what it is you're talking about, and that people are lucky or it's a benefit to them to be able to spend time with you because they get to learn so much, then you're the prize that they have to win your time. Right? And that will eradicate your neediness. And then you won't say things like, you know, you won't play fetch me another rock. You know, when they ask you to do all these assignments, you won't ask them, so what do you think? Is this something you'd be interested in? Once you have that prize frame in your mind, then you operate from a frame of they get to spend a certain amount of time with you and they're fortunate to be able to buy from you, right? Now, how do you not make that overt and, you know, introduce the asshole effect? That's the nuance of your personality that you got to sort out. But please, thank you. So what do you think? Is this something you'd be interested in? I really hope we can do this account. Do you have any questions? Can I get you another report? Would you like a free sample? We have some discounts. Right.
Before they've even asked for the discount, you're offering discounts. And, you know, the other thing I would just say to close out that part of the conversation is it also keeps you from taking on the bad clients that suck the life out of you or the projects that suck the life out of you. Because we've all done that too in an effort of neediness to, and then we take on stuff that actually doesn't serve us and we're frustrated in having to actually do the work.
Absolutely. In my business, the more we give people, the less likely we'll sign the account. You just need to maintain your integrity and your dignity. Give them a presentation on the big idea, how things are changing, what the problem is, why what you do is very hard to do, your solution, who else does it, why you're different, what the ROI is, what the upside is of working with you, where the downside protection is, who's on your team, and what are next steps. That's it. That's the only thing that goes in the presentation. Nothing else belongs. Then at the end, you can say, but we're very busy. You know, as we said, I need to learn a little bit more about you. Why don't you tell me in context of the presentation that I just gave you how you're a fit or how we're a fit together, and then we'll figure out if we should go further. That eradicates neediness completely in a way that's fair, honest, fun, interesting, and not mean in any way at all. You know, one of my rules is, you know, within 6 feet of me, I'm always having fun. Okay? If you want to not have fun, right, then back away and go have it somewhere else, right? So that's, I like to get margin. I like my customers to, you know, I like our clients to be fair. If there's a problem, then come talk to me about it. But when we're together, I need to be having fun. I can't be miserable. The rest of life is hard enough. So it's a rule.
Well, Aaron, I feel like this has been fabulous business therapy. So thank you. I have copious notes. But let's, before we go, talk about your new book coming out. I think it's called The User's Guide to Power. So I know it's not out yet, but tell us a little bit about it and why you wrote it.
So the user's Guide to Power looks more deeply at the dominance hierarchy, how where we fit from a status level with people around us. What when we go into pitch, most here's a good example. And one of the central themes of the book, when people have entrepreneurs have new products, they want to make it sound sexy and exciting and new and novel and interesting and better than anything else that has ever come before. But that's not what people buy. People buy plain vanilla that's slightly upgraded. Okay, plain vanilla. Another one is pre-wired ideas. So many of the entrepreneurs, I see thousands of pitches and presentations. They come with totally new concepts that there's a heavy cognitive load on my brain, and it takes me so long to ramp up on what it is they have. I'm burnt out by the time I understand it, or I never get to understand it. If you come in with a pre-wired idea, if you understand where you are in the dominance hierarchy, and you frame your idea as plain vanilla, it's always done this way, this is the one that works, this has worked forever, but it's improved and upgraded, then you're a lot further down the way to having power and understanding how to influence people and get what it is you need in a short period of time.
Do you think that's why businesses like, I'll use the very obvious one that everyone knows, but like Uber or Airbnb were so successful, is because on one hand it's disruptive, yet on the other hand it's totally obvious?
Yeah, exactly. This is how it's always done. A car comes and picks you up, right? You pay the driver, they take you to the destination, but the payment mechanism is a little bit different and the driver is a little bit better.
Warren, this has been absolutely amazing. What's one last piece of advice you have for launch readers out there trying to pitch a big idea?
Most of the time, people come in and say, here's the big idea, and it's a small idea, right?
Yeah.
Big ideas are truly big. So here's a piece of advice. Have the ability to talk about an idea for 2 or 3 minutes without saying anything about yourself, your company, what it is you have, or what you want.
Give me an example. Walk me through a story on that one.
Well, I already did. So today, if you think about all the creams and potions and stuff that we put on our body and we drink, right? Today we're exposed to more chemicals in a single day than nature ever intended us to have in a single lifetime. That's an idea. It doesn't say anything about my shampoo. It doesn't say anything about bananas. It doesn't say anything about my company. It doesn't say anything about what we want. That's just a big idea.
So this has been amazing, Oren. Thank you. I have learned so much. I mean, we'll have to see what Launch Streeters think. That was me exerting power at the end. Did it work? No, really. It's been absolutely fantastic interviewing you.
No, I have to see what they think. I also have to see if I'm willing to sign the release form. So we both have to.
Okay. I had to get, you know, I'm an experimenter. Like, I need to try the stuff that I learn. So, you know, I thought I'd give it a shot.
You're good. I like you. You're very, we should have done video. You're very charismatic. You might be really gross, gruff. I don't know, but you sound wonderful. Very charismatic. And I hope we get a chance to meet or talk again.
I did too. And I'm looking forward to the next book. Thank you for coming on.
Thanks, Mara. Yeah, thank you.
And in closing, Launch Streeters, wow. This interview has made me truly rethink how I present my ideas. Now, you know, I'm not going to stop here, right? Here's what I want you to do. Go to our website, go to launchstreet.com, G-O-T-O, launchstreet.com, one word. Click on podcasts and click on Oren's podcast. Then leave me a message about how you're going to change up how you talk about your idea, how you figured out what the right actual benefit to the audience is, that kind of talking to the lizard brain, all of that. Let me know how it went. How are you going to pitch anything? That's what I want to know. All right, Tamara out.
Thanks for hanging out with us inside Launch Street. When you're ready to take your game to the next level, join the thousands of others that are upping their innovation edge on GoToLaunchStreet.com, the top online education resource and community platform for innovators looking to use innovation to get measurable results. GoToLaunchStreet.com.